Hello, and welcome to The Staffing Show, the only podcast that delivers tools, tips, and tactics from the staffing and recruiting industry's top executives and thought leaders.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Staffing Referrals. At Staffing Referrals, we understand the challenges your agency faces every day, from finding high-quality candidates and clients to automating your recruitment process. Our platform is designed to help you grow your agency faster. Imagine a world where your agency can automatically build your talent community, improve your recruiter's productivity, and automate manual processes, all the while improving the candidate experience. But don't just take our word for it. Here's what a few satisfied customers have to say. Our referral program boomed after partnering with Staffing Referrals. The technology allows us the tracking, communication, and reporting our traditional referral program desperately needed to unify and expand. Can't imagine our business without it. Are you ready to transform your staffing agency? Let's reduce your dependency on job boards. Deliver the experience your candidates expect from a modern business and turn your talent pool into a competitive advantage. Visit staffingreferrals.com and get ready to grow.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Staffing Show. Today, I am super excited to be joined by a whole group of staffing industry experts and leaders. And we're going to be digging into discussion around your tech stack, AI, and really discussing how modern staffing firms are approaching technology to accelerate the growth of their agency. To kick things off, since we've got a group here, we're going to go around and do some intros. Sarah, would you mind kicking it off? And also, something a little bit different for the staffing show today. We're going to do intros and also share our spirit animal.
Prior to us hitting record, I'm already sweating about the spirit animal question, so I'll just dive into it. I'm Sarah Orr. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer here at CrossMed Healthcare. I've been in the staffing industry for over 11 years, kind of just focusing on leading initiatives across brand, digital strategy, candidate engagement, and like demand generation. My spirit animal would be an octopus. I'm the ultimate multitasker, so I love kind of adapting to trends, figuring out solutions to problems, and just kind of always evolving.
Fantastic. How about you?
Matt Dichter, VP of Sales at Staffing Engine. We are an AI solutions provider focused solely on the third-party staffing and recruiting industry. And a lot of listeners might know me from my Bullhorn days because I was there for a very long time. And spirit animals might have changed over the last few years. I feel like back in the day when I was an individual contributor, I always would say like a lone wolf kind of thing. But now I'm going to have to go like blue nose pit bull, because they say that dogs look like their owners a lot of time. But I feel like my personality is a lot like my dog Blue. So I'm going to go blue nose pitty.
Love it. Love it. And Peter, you're up next.
Peter Sidoff, RefShirt, been in the industry a long time as well. Excited to be on this panel with all you guys. And I forgot about the spirit animal thing. So I just watched this video on a panda and it's pretty funny. I don't know if you've seen those ones where they're falling around just eating kind of clumsy, but just to like chill and have a good time. So that's because I just saw the video and kind of reminds me of myself a little bit. I like to eat, chill, and relax, and also can be a little bit clumsy. So I guess I'll go with the panda right now.
I think that tracks. That's right on. And how about you, Corey?
Corey Grissom here, VP of Sales and Marketing at Opus Match. I believe I'm the only non-staffing expert here today. I have about 10 years of technology, sales, and leadership underneath my belt. Prior to getting into staffing technology, had a lot of experience leading sales at gig marketplaces like Postmates and Wendolo. In the world of spirit animals, I'm going to align with a thought leader that I received a message from about 6 a.m. this morning, and I'm going to go with the noble squirrel. As you must be agile, you must store and preserve wealth for winter, and you must follow your tail.
All right. Last but not least, Jack.
Love it. Yeah, Scott, you actually stole my spirit animal, so I'm scrambling now. But my name is Jack Copeland. I am CEO and co-founder at Staffing Future. Been in the industry 22 years, terrifyingly, pretty much just straight from school, straight into staffing technology, niche within a niche. And I was going to say that I would like to think of myself as some sort of gentrified badger, but instead I'm probably like a highly caffeinated squirrel. So since Corey's stolen squirrel, I'll go for like a highly caffeinated raccoon.
Oh, while we were having that, I didn't know if we were into the spirit animals today or not. And I didn't have one picked out, but I did. I asked ChatGPT to give me mine while that was going on. And it said a gray wolf because it hunts in packs of 4 to 6. Your referral loops mark new market territory without paid jobs.
Oh, God.
You just do a little plug in there for you on the referral side of things.
That's better than a
I've trained my AI quite well, you know? All right. Well, let's get into the conversation. First thing that we want to talk about is some of the challenges in staffing right now, and just hear some different industry perspectives. So we're all talking to a lot of different agencies on the vendor side. And then Sarah, obviously, you're living it day to day in healthcare staffing coming off of NAFO. We can see that it's a challenging market, and there's a lot of interesting dynamics right now. So maybe you could start off by telling us from your perspective, what are some of the key challenges you're seeing in the staffing industry today?
Yeah, I feel like there's quite a few that we're kind of navigating through, but I mean, the travel nurse market is still kind of finding its roots. Demand and pay have come down quite a bit since those pandemic highs, but a lot of the travelers still have those expectations rooted in that era, which kind of creates a bit of a disconnect for us. And let's be clear, like the workforce shortages haven't gone anywhere. So especially in those like really specialized roles, we're still seeing the impact of retirement and burnout. And a lot of clinicians, especially that younger generation, are stepping away from the traditional bedside roles or even leaving the field entirely. And then on the flip side, our hospitals are under pressure too. So the budgets are tighter. They're being more selective. There's delays in starts, and we're cutting down the number of travelers they're bringing in. And then one thing that I'm really seeing too is just the retention is a huge challenge. So that's kind of tougher than ever. Travelers are just not as loyal to one agency that they used to be, and they're kind of brand agnostic now. So kind of what matters most is the experience, the speed, and the pay. And loyalty is truly earned through like the strong recruiter relationships and a seamless experience within your company, as opposed to just sticking with one agency for a long time like we used to see.
A lot of interesting dynamics and challenges from your perspective. And Matt, I know you've got an interesting angle from kind of how AI is operating in this. So maybe you can touch on that a little bit as well.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, staffing and recruiting for the most part is still a speed game, right? And so AI has the potential to offer game-changing speed. And we've seen some really successful deployments with that. But there's still a lot of staffing agencies that are trying to cross the chasm and figure out how to successfully implement an AI strategy. And I feel like that's a really big challenge because there's already forward-thinking agencies that have already hopped on the bandwagon. And then there's a lot of window shoppers that are thinking about it, vetting it out, but like maybe we'll implement something in 6 to 12 months from now. And that's just not going to be fast enough with how fast things are moving from a technology standpoint. And then just one more item to piggyback off that. One of the things that we see is agencies that are implementing AI, but they're forgetting about the human touch part, right? Like there needs to be a clear handoff between technology, AI, and then a live recruiter. Implemented technology that does a really good job qualifying a candidate, as an example, and then there's no clear handoff to a recruiter, that candidate is just going to sit there for a while and wait for someone to reach back out to them. So it's really important that agencies understand what their processes are coming in and really find a way to tie the technology and the recruiter and candidate experience together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Peter, what's your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing a lot of different pain points, as we all are, and I think we're all going to talk about, but I think quality has dropped off a little bit lately, and it's because speed is important, but it's also having agencies cut corners at that point in time, because Sarah, as you know, in healthcare, right, speed's really important to get that candidate to the MSP as fast as possible. But that sometimes makes recruiters, like I said, cut that specific corner. So maybe instead of actually doing a detailed reference check or finding out if that candidate is a good fit based off the client that you're going to be working with, they're kind of just doing quick check-in calls and be like, hey, Dave, is this person a good fit? Great. All right. See you later. Bye. Well, do they have good bedside manner? Are they going to fill the role that you're looking for? Just because they need to get that candidate in front. And that reflection comes back on the agency back in the day if they don't show up or they don't perform that they're looking for. So people not being able to speed that process up, but understand what they're looking for as a big pain point and kind of an issue on the talent side, at least getting those people to facilities as fast as possible.
Yeah, it is crazy right now, as it feels like more agencies are struggling to differentiate their services and try to figure out how did they actually stand out tools like Staffing Engine for the speeds, tools like RefAssured for the quality side of it. And we're going to talk more about the candidate experience and also the digital experience from a web perspective as well. But I really think if I were to jump in here, like figuring out how to differentiate your agency, how you stand out and what you're doing differently than others seems like one of the core elements as well. Corey, what's your take?
No, I think that the entire team's really hit it today. We're in a market that's a lot different than it was in 2020, a lot different than it was in 2021, 2022, right? We're in a very job-restricted market right now where the job volume coming in, the rates, they're not the same as they used to be. So you really have to maximize every touch, every piece of engagement with your healthcare professionals and your candidates across all of staffing right now. We're seeing it in B2B SaaS sales. We're seeing it at the recruitment desk level. It takes a lot more touches, a lot more engagements to really create great outreach and great engagement with a potential candidate. And then to Matt's point, it demands speed. It demands verification. From Peter's point, you also have to differentiate yourself right now, even coming down to lead sources where you're getting candidates. To Sarah's point, without the loyalty of the agency now, those one-to-one relationships when you do make candidate engagement are that much more important. And we'll see that a lot of talent marketplaces and lead sources out there are typically where some of these candidates are going back to and not the agency after an assignment because they focused on candidate experience, they focused on speed, they focused on creating a profile very easy with verification layers. And it's really a challenge of our community as tech providers to help arm agencies like FrostMed with the tools to compete with people so that your travelers and the candidates that you paid to engage with don't leave you and go right back to the lead source in which they came from.
Yeah, I've got a quick one, Dave. He mentioned like the job shortage, but also like in travel nursing, for example, there's also a nursing shortage and candidate shortage in many cases. And when that candidate interacts with you, and if they don't get prompt follow-up or follow-up at all, they're going to remember that. And then if they go to a competitive agency that delivers a really good experience, they're going to remember that too. And so it's really critical that staffing agencies pay attention to the experience that they're providing because you can't really afford to miss out on candidates in this market.
No, absolutely. And then as we even think about that jobs crisis, it's becoming even more difficult now to go out and find clients. Being a supplier on an MSP isn't enough. You need direct business to differentiate yourself. And it really leans into some of the things that Jack will be able to shed some light on today when it comes to going out there and finding those right sort of clients to really kind of interface with this type of ecosystem.
And that's kind of the big challenge that I would say that we've been seeing. It's aligned with what you guys are talking about on the candidate experience side, candidate generation with AI and automation, and trying to basically figure out how do we, you know, in a tough candidate market, how do we attract candidates, but how do we keep that engagement and that relationship whilst also sort of doing it at scale? And I guess the thing that we've seen a bit of inside healthcare, but also outside healthcare staffing, where we do quite a bit, is just more on the same problem on the client side, right? Like finding it harder and harder to get clients. I'm finding it harder and harder to pick up additional jobs. How do I start to automate that process? How do I use AI in that process as well? Because that's what my competitors are doing. But how do I then do it in a way that is still detailed and personalized and engaged enough and has, you know, kind of a good quality message so I'm not just spamming the whole world? And so that's something we've been trying to help with, but it feels like almost an identical challenge just on that ongoing balance between clients and candidates that everyone's fighting all the time.
We've all kind of touched on this in different ways, but this, the overall kind of consumerization of staffing, where everybody's expecting the same brand experience they have with an Uber or Airbnb, but through your staffing agency. And that's why we're all here today to talk about kind of like how you can integrate tech in the correct way to create those experiences. And Sarah, really excited to hear from you on just what your journey's been like in terms of integrating some of us here in terms of our platforms into your candidate journey.
Yeah. So when I think about like the perfect tech stack or how to build it, I keep in mind like technology that works together, technology that's creating solutions, technology that's creating like seamless human-centered experience. I think that's going to be a main theme that we talk about is like, how do we get this like human-centric behavior here? But technology that should do more than just check boxes, technology that should be creating momentum for your business. At CrossMed, we've been intentional about who we've partnered with and who we've integrated with in our tech ecosystem. So like every decision we're making is through the lens of the candidate journey, because with their experience, if it's more personalized, if it's seamless, it leads to better results for everybody. So to kind of like kick it off on talking about how I've been integrated with all of you guys as tech partners, I kind of want to look through it like through the life cycle of the candidate and kind of like the different touch points that they had. So kind of kicking it off at like the top of the funnel, the entry point for it. Candidates are finding us through like the programmatic advertising, job boards, organic search, social media, user generated content, and also referrals. So I definitely say that this is the part of the journey that is heavily powered by staffing referrals. For many of our candidates, that's exactly where that CrossMed journey begins. Referrals are kind of one of our top acquisition channels. And I know, Davey, you and I've talked even recently, even today, on some of our impressive numbers. I don't know if we want to drop some of those numbers here now or if you want to wait for those to be a little bit of a sinker. But
I was just looking at your account today, and there's two things that stood out. One, their referrals per ambassador. So their kind of their referability, how many people are referring to them, was at 212% of the industry average. They had over 2.1 referrals per ambassador in the system, which is exceptional. That speaks to the brand, to your reputation, to what you've, the foundation that you've laid at CrossMed, because people do not refer people to agencies that they do not have experiences with. So that's like a, it's something to be really, really proud of. And it's also the foundation for, you guys are 41% of your placements in 2025. Yeah. Have started with a referral.
It's incredible.
Which is a pretty fantastic stat. The industry average is usually somewhere between 15 and 20%. So you guys are actually quite a bit more than double what the industry average is in terms of driving placements from referrals, which is awesome.
That's amazing. I used to have a leader in my life that would call me a woo girl. So like right now it'd be my big woo for that, because that's incredible. So that's really awesome that we're doing that. I think that that's by design. I think we've been intentional with that too, because we want to lean into that peer-to-peer recommendations that's built on trust, and those warm leads convert faster. It's building a community of advocates. And that's something that you guys have done very well for us and have been a huge input or a huge reason on why we've been successful in that area. So that's great. Kind of taking it down from that funnel, then just moving into like the website and the mobile experience. This is a subtle hint of something that we're working on behind the scenes, but you know, with staffing future, once a candidate lands on the site, you know, they hit a clear curated experience. You don't want candidates coming to your website and just already confused on what to do next and what you guys do. But your SEO driven microsites, they help you discover relevant jobs and information quickly. And then from there, Opus Match powers that AI driven candidate portal. So Opus personalizes matches with their skills, their preferences. Corey, jump in if I'm missing something, but credentials, the user behavior, and that's been making it faster and more accurate. So kind of, it's not removing the recruiter's role by any means, but it's allowing them to be more efficient with their time and do what they do best. And it's allowing the candidates to get to that job faster without just the massive search of trying to find what they're actually interested in. And then lead distribution and responses. So Staffing Engine takes a big part here. They're ensuring that we're responding instantly, integrating conversational chatbots to automate like the basics, but then also implementing the lead distribution so recruiters can spend time on the high impact conversations instead of just chasing the forms and the emails. We found that automating this process has been a huge game changer for us. It's fast, it's responsive, it's contacting those candidates. I think, do you remember, Matt, what that number was, under 10 minutes?
The goal is under 10 minutes during office hours. And there's a lot of data that we have that shows that if you're able to follow up with applicants that quickly, the chance of them converting to a placement go up about 3 to 4x. And honestly, like that's why we all like working together on this call, because Opus, the mobile app, when someone applies there, that becomes something that funnels through distribution. Website, same thing. And then even like referrals and references become funneled through. So it's consolidating down to one place to make sure that those applicants, to my point earlier, get timely follow-up and get a live recruiter calling them, because we still don't think, we're not trying to replace recruiters with AI. We're trying to supplement them. When we do have someone qualified, get their butts on the phone immediately with a live human.
Yeah. And I think something to keep in mind with that as the candidate experience, if you think you are the only agency that that candidate is applying to at that moment, you are so wrong. You've got to beat the competition to contacting them and getting to them faster. And that's the reason why those numbers are so significant there.
It's the instant gratification generation, yeah. Right? That yes. We kind of all sit across Gen Z and millennials. And I think that's a lot of the target market for a lot of people these days. So it makes complete sense.
Well, we've seen it on the sales side. I mean, going back to my Bullhorn Inside sales days, they told us that when we got an inbound lead, we should, like, they convert way better if you get them 5 minutes after they fill out a sales contact form. Sales and recruiting are not so different. You're just selling people, helping people find jobs. And so, like, it would follow that recruiting and staffing should work in a very similar way that sales does, where if someone expresses interest, you got to go follow up with them, especially if your competitors are doing it in minutes and you're taking hours to get back to them.
Absolutely. Once we have like the candidate in our system moving forward, that's when RefAssured comes in. So we automate a traditionally slow manual process by using RefAssured. That helps us submit those candidates faster. It helps us make sure that they're compliant and credible. And so for like the candidates, it's eliminating that unnecessary back and forth that a lot of people have done in the past. And then for clients, it just delivers trust. And so RefAssured has been a critical part of our tech stacker in that specific scenario. And then this is probably another plug for staffing referrals because it's a full life cycle for it. But once someone's in our network, then the cycle doesn't end and it expands. And staffing referrals has made it very easy for our current travelers to attract new travelers and share their experience. And that keeps that funnel full and the community driven. And then just the whole back-end infrastructure, like the talent lifecycle management, I would say. Like that entire ecosystem is just anchored by Bullhorn. So our core ATS is that. It's our central integration hub. It's where all of our tech partners connect and they ensure like the data is flowing cleanly across the platforms. And then we heavily lean on Bullhorn Automation to streamline both the internal workflows and also those external communications from like triggering events based on like the candidate actions and then also powering operational efficiency. So Bullhorn just kind of keeps everything aligned, responsive, and scalable for us.
Yeah, and you guys have taken a really comprehensive approach to your tech stack and thoughtful. I mean, I feel like over the years that we've worked together, you've kind of pieced it all together. And I know a lot of the listeners for this podcast are trying to figure out what tech to buy. They're inundated with just the number of options. And like with now all of the AI tools and AI startups, it's just more than I feel it personally. I'm trying like 15 things at any given time. There's a lot of options out there. When you're looking at your tech stack, how are you kind of looking at it holistically and then measuring the ROI to make sure that you're getting out of it what you need?
Yeah, I mean, from a holistic approach, I probably look at it a little bit differently. The traditional way of measuring ROI and staffing has always been, did this tool help me place a candidate? And that's kind of an outdated mindset, especially if you want to build a scalable staffing operation, in my opinion. So for me, we take more of a holistic approach. ROI has to kind of go beyond placements. I look at how each tech partner contributes to the entire candidate lifecycle, as well as the health of our business long term. So it's not just about the cost per lead, the cost per placement, or even the cost per hire, which is all real data. And it's very important to track. So don't stop tracking that. But it's also about the time, the trust, the engagement, and the data quality. Kind of some things that I keep top of mind if you're talking about like the different approaches to measuring that ROI. We've kind of broken it up as we're talking about this and prepping for it is like the time savings and efficiency gain. So is this tool removing manual work? Are recruiters spending more time actually recruiting, or are they just spending time navigating your technology? So like Staffing Engine, you guys are a great example of like you're streamlining conversations, you're helping with lead distribution. That frees up recruiters' time for building relationships and like filling staffing needs. The improved candidate experience, you're thinking is the experience faster? Is it clear? Are we empowering the candidate more? Are we reducing BTQs? Are we improving retention? And so that's kind of where Opus Match jumps in and helps out significantly there. They're delivering better fitting jobs instantly. You're helping dig for that right match and have one place to manage like credentials, time cards. And that's real ROI right there because it shows up in loyalty and user experience and conversion rates, speed to placement, retention. Plus, a lot of the things on that ROI is you're giving back time to our business services team so they can focus on like higher impact processes and efficiencies. So that's really impactful there. Other things I think about is like, does the tech contribute to like a seamless experience that makes us stand out? So DB talked about like the differentiators of a company. What are we doing to be different from other companies? Well, you have to work on your enhanced reputation and your brand value. What are you guys doing to stay innovative? Supply automation, segmentation, and those tailored experiences for your travelers. And that's like a staffing feature. So you guys kind of come into play there, right? You're building websites that aren't just transactional applications. You guys are building that first impression. You're providing speed, clarity, and design, and all impact. All of that is perceived value. And then there's the direct financial impact. So did it drive more placements? Did it provide faster conversions? Did it increase revenue? Can we quantify revenue linked to this tool? Because you should be able to with accurate reporting. Staffing referrals, we've done that before. You know, we've talked about the measurable ROI, about how the candidate referrals allows us to track source to placement. And obviously, you guys are our highest acquisition source. So that's very impactful. What are some other things? The activating passive candidates. So is the tech helping us to re-engage leads just sitting in our database? Kind of what we already talked about, like the market is restricted. Candidates are not in this industry as much as they used to be. So you have an insane amount of candidates just sitting in your database. Are you surfacing those matches and touch points that you've missed or that are kind of sitting in the back end right now? So again, Opus Match is giving that intelligent recommendations, kind of doing like nurturing campaigns for you without having to build those nurturing campaigns. And then you're just looking at that like multi-touch attribution challenges. So things that I've always looked at, and I know Corey and I've gone rounds and rounds on talking about this attribution channel for years now. So like, not everything is a first or a last touch. Not everything is, this is exactly, as soon as they came through this source, this is how they got placed. So what you need to think about is what influenced this conversion journey along the way. And you can't just credit it to the last email or the first ad that they clicked. That's why attribution reporting and like our own internal alignment is so important with all of these tech stacks kind of measuring together. That's a lot, but
no,
whole enchilada there.
That was very thorough and a great deep dive into that. On the just coming off of Natho at the roundtable, the CMO roundtable, everybody was talking about attribution, first touch, last touch. How do you do it? And basically, it seems like it's a mess. It seems like a clear view on that. I would argue that your background in marketing gives you a better angle and perspective on it than most, because I think that the first touch is important, so is last touch, but so are all of them in between. It's hard to know exactly what's the most important. And there's a lot of different models that you can look at, like the linear or different approach. How are you guys doing any modeling internally? It sounded like you had some unique ways of digging into that.
We have several. We kind of have our own internal like candidate scoring algorithm systems that we use quite often, but a lot of the data is also pulled from the data that we get from you guys. So we've just kind of been aggregating that data into putting it into actionable results.
That's great.
The multi-touch is a tough one. It's something that we're working really hard on right now. But imagine like someone goes and applies on Travel Nurse Source and gets sent into your database and sits there for a few months because there's no initial contact. And then Bullhorn Automation sends them an email that drives them to their Staffing Future website. And while they're on the Staffing Future site, they see an Opus registration link. And so by that point, they came in through TNS, they got warmed up by automation, they stopped by the Staffing Future site, and they downloaded a mobile app. And so like all of those had an influence on that place. Yep. It's really hard to weigh like how much influence. And so like for us, if they apply in the mobile app, that's the source that we attribute it to. But like, there's obviously, there could be a history that came before that that can be tough to see inside the database.
The other piece that you touched on there just briefly, but I'd love to hear anybody's thoughts around this, is the value of data just beyond the placements, the first touch, last touch. I know you touched on the experience, the different touch points, but if anybody else had any thoughts or insights around that, I know that's something that I think about a lot, and having run marketing for a lot of different brands over the years. When I had my marketing consultancy, I felt like this was the most frustrating conversation to have as a marketer with the CFO or the owner, was what's worthwhile, what's valuable, and how do you prove it? So if anybody had any other insights there, I'd love to hear it.
I think it's kind of interesting on like the post-hire information data, right? So like understanding how that clinician's doing at the facility at that point in time. And Sarah, that comes to evaluations. And you brought up redeployment and also retention a little bit earlier in the call, Sarah. I guess, how does CrossMed kind of differentiate your talent once you've placed them? Is it those evaluation processes? Is it check-ins that you're doing with them to help redeploy them faster? I guess, how are you using that data on how that candidate's doing once you've placed them to find them a new role?
Yeah, I think we're really leaning into our technology and our automation systems, whether that is automating communication out to the travelers or automating tasks to our recruiters to make sure that they're still connecting, they're still making those touch points, because it's incredibly important to still have those human connections and that human interaction, and making sure that people don't feel like they're just a transaction and they're just a quantity. But yeah, really leaning into all of our technology to try and use that for making sure that they're coming back in, they're feeling like they're having that seamless experience and they're not being forgotten after they get placed.
That's excellent. It sounds like you've really taken a holistic approach and been very thoughtful with the strategy for it. One of the things that I would imagine a lot of people listening to this are thinking is, well, you've got a lot of different tech partners, a lot of different point solutions that you're working with. Could you just shed some light on what does the experience look like when it comes to managing and working with the different tech partners, and what are some of the benefits that you've seen from it as well?
Yeah, there's obviously pros and cons with both, or there's pros and cons with managing multiple tech vendors. The cons, I think that managing multiple tech partners in general, it's not always easy. Integration is probably the biggest challenge that I see every single time, between internal bandwidth, making sure you have the right departments included. I continuously see, even from my previous experience or other companies that I've helped integrate technology with, making sure that you have the right people in those meetings to make sure that you have the right data flowing cleanly into Bullhorn, and then also ensuring that nothing breaks down the stream. So in my opinion, this challenge is kind of unavoidable, but it does come with every technology platform, and it kind of with whoever you choose to partner and integrate with. But I will say the flip side and the silver lining of that con is it does give you an opportunity to really map out and take the time to understand your workflow, clean up any automations, and then make sure everything's working behind the scenes so you have cleaner data. But the huge pro to this is, when it comes to tech, you don't want to be all in one shop. That's intentional. We're intentional with that. We don't want to be a one-stop shop with at one partner. So the people that we've chosen, we've partnered with multiple specialized platforms, and that's been paying off huge. So each partner we work with, they all serve a purpose and they're all best in the class in that area. And that's why we chose them. And I personally would rather manage like the relationships with vendors to have the right tools than to force one system to do things that it was really never meant to do. In my opinion, the key is strategy, building a tech stack that like works like a team, not a bunch of solo players. And like this particular group with you guys and these tech partners I have, you guys work incredibly well together.
Awesome. Yeah. And I was just going to second that, Sarah. I worked at Broadbean for about a decade. And what Broadbean was the kind of the middleware of connecting up loads of different job boards and loads of different ATS systems. And people always kind of had this fear that it wouldn't work, because the minute you try and integrate lots of things, it all falls down and everyone kind of points the fingers at each other, like that Spider-Man meme or whatever. But I think these days people are adapting, right? It's not so much a tech stack as more of like a tech ecosystem or a talent ecosystem. And especially if you've got companies that are used to working with lots of different point solutions, and companies like our group where they're used to sort of engaging with other players and they're getting on great and they understand not just how to integrate, but like they understand who the contacts are at those relationships, and there's a mutual association of trying to solve specific problems, and also history and case studies and example of sort of how we've become better together and how we work with other clients, then you get a lot more benefit from that sort of ecosystem, right? Where it sort of becomes like a self-perpetuating flywheel of positivity and success. And so I think that's why I love this group, and that's why I love working with lots of different people in the industry. And I asked ChatGPT how I could associate raccoon into everything else that we're doing right here. And so apparently raccoons are workforce bandits, also known as talent ninjas, due to the mask that they have. So as far as I'm concerned, we're the workforce bandits.
I love that.
I've got a quick comment on the platform all-in-one versus integrated partners. I'm going to try to watch what I say so I don't get in trouble. But there are certain providers out there that historically have taken the marketplace approach that seems to be moving towards that we should do everything with us and we're a one-stop shop. And I'm going to give an example from outside the staffing industry to avoid getting slapped on the wrist here. We're a Zoom Info shop, and Zoom Info is, you know, hands down the market leader for data for go-to-market teams and sales. And over the years, ZoomInfo has made a lot of acquisitions. They've developed a lot of functionality in a lot of different places. But at the end of the day, what they're really, really good at is providing sales data. We love Chorus. They bought Chorus. It's a call recording and transcription service. But man, their engagement tool sucks. So it sucks so bad that like they'll introduce like SalesLoft and other partners to do it. And I think when you look at companies that try to position themselves as being all in one, usually they don't do everything good. There's a couple of things that they can hang their hat on that they're like the best at, and that's why you want to partner with them. But the best in breed approach allows for folks that do really, really one or two things very well to plug into that core platform. And I think that's really important for staffing agencies to understand as they build their strategy.
Just add to that, Matt. I've been a HubSpot channel partner years ago, and then I live in HubSpot, love HubSpot, but
love HubSpot.
I still pay for SEO Moz, and I still pay for Unbound. I paid for landing page. Like, if it's a element of your business that's core to your business, that is key to your success, I do find that personally, when it's come to, you know, my HubSpot approach, which they do everything, I still went out and bought all of the additional vendors that I needed to make sure that I had the specialization in the areas that matter most.
Yeah, I think what we've all kind of described here, and the piggyback off of Matt World Classes, shout out, no free shout out there. I think what Sarah has really described and what Jack even leaned into is what CrossMed was looking for wasn't point solutions. They weren't looking for vendors. They were looking for strategic partners, someone they could share their business goals and objectives with, someone that they could align with to start to look at things in the data, in the workflow, and have an understanding of the outcome. And I think that's really what differentiates a lot of us that are on the podcast today from some of the other solutions in the staffing world is you have those let's do it all platforms out there that don't really specialize, or you have something that's so plug and play that it doesn't really truly build value for the brand over time. And I think that's where the real challenge is for continuing to engage with candidates as an agency, as a technology provider, is you have to drive value that continues to keep someone to happily renew, happily extend, and that differentiates you from everything else. And I think that's what CrossMed has done very intentionally. You can see it in their decision-making. You see it in their roster on their team. And it's the way that they built their tech stack. And I think you can kind of feel that environment.
Yeah. Very world-classy of you. at the end of the day, that's why you bought a Bullhorn or a Salesforce or a platform that had open API connectivity.
Yeah.
It wasn't to do everything in one stop. It's to extend partners that do certain things really well. That's why I love Salesforce, because I can plug any cool tool that I find into it and it will integrate and talk to it.
It's flexibility and innovation, right? And the broader you become, the bigger you become this like oil tanker that can't turn around. And there's these little speedboats that come in and they just do a couple of things really, really well. And they sort of innovate, right? And so I think that's why if you learn how to put that together, you get the benefit of that and you get best of breed in every area.
I think foundationally, that's one of the reasons that, I mean, you can see the ATSs that are friendly with marketplace partners have accelerated largely because they allow you to pick the additional platforms that you want to plug and play into, which is, I mean, I always think of it like a mobile phone. What makes an iPhone great? It's the apps that you can get with it easily and that are seamless that work with it as well. Pete, I think you had something you were going to jump in there with as well.
Well, I think it's just interesting because everyone's talked about different data points throughout the candidate experience, and you can take those different data points and start realizing how that candidate is going to be a good fit, but you need a technology that ties it all together. And how we partner together, I think, helps Sarah's team make those decisions a little bit quicker and differentiates their talent compared to everyone else. Because if you have a bunch of different tech that doesn't talk together, that data is not going to come together and you're not going to be able to use it to enhance your experience. So I think it's been pretty cool how we all work together and how companies like Sarah are able to use that data to differentiate themselves, especially in this tough market.
Yeah. And I think that, like, I mean, any other staffing agency listening right now, like, I think we all can agree that from our end, we've seen how, like, you guys and some other tech partners are starting to really collaborate with each other, and you're doing it on purpose, right? Like, you guys are, you know, you're part of a bigger ecosystem. You know that you're building platforms with integration in mind. I think that you guys are really leaning into the partnerships that just make life easier for the agencies. And in turn, that's making our internal team's life easier.
Absolutely. And Sarah, one of the other areas that I wanted to jump into was the build versus buy conversation. Mm-hmm. I feel like this has maybe shifted in the market, especially with current budget constraints, but it is something that over the years, I always think it's interesting how people approach that. And I think you've got an interesting perspective on it.
Yeah, from my experience, I mean, I can make it really simple by just saying speed to market wins here. I think that we've taken at CrossMed, we've taken the buy approach. I've said this before, but we want to go with best in class solutions. So partners that can be play critical parts on the candidate lifecycle, that gives us the agility for innovation, that gives us control over customization to work with you guys. Building for us doesn't make sense. It's at resource heavy. It requires a lot of upfront investments for developers, for infrastructure, for ongoing maintenance. And when you're trying to build it yourself, the likelihood of you trying to keep up with the development timelines and with launches and feature releases is not really there for you.
Yeah, it's always crazy to think about the challenges that go along. We mm-hmm. all know what building software takes. It takes a lot of effort.
It's not one and done either, right? It's got an ongoing cost. People make out that if you build it yourself, you know, it hasn't got an ongoing cost, but servers cost money, developers cost money, maintenance cost money. People push API updates without even telling you, and you find out when you've got 200 clients on that platform, right?
running a technology company is a full-time business. You don't want to have running one of those inside of a staffing agency.
Absolutely. And we're going to kind of round it out here. We talk about what the future of staffing, and we have one kind of closing question, but wanted to get each panelist your kind of where you see things going in the future of staffing. And obviously, we're going through some challenging times or some tech disruption, a lot of changes happening in the staffing industry right now. But maybe we could kick it off, and we're going to kick it back to you, Sarah, to start it off again. So,
yeah. And we're kind of talking about like the future of like tech and staffing, at least. So, like in my mind, I think there's several things. I'm excited about like how much smarter and more human it's becoming. I think we're finally getting past the stage where automation was thought to be just about speed, and it was industry-wide cutting out recruiters. And I think that's gone. I think that was part of the digital transformation mindset. And I think the best tech is all about personalization at scale. I'm excited about how we're finally starting to tap into data in meaningful ways. I think that used to be paralysis by analysis, especially as a marketer. We collect tons and tons of data and dashboards everywhere, but there was no real clarity on what to do with it. So now it's shifting where we're actually using that data to drive action. And then again, like selfishly as a marketer, I love that we're getting closer to that real attribution clarity where we can provide more insight onto how more connected systems and how we're seeing what's working and what's not working.
That's fantastic. And I'll also add to this question, is there anything specific that you think will be most likely to change in the next 12 months?
Oh gosh, yeah. I think that the biggest shift, I think it's been talked about a lot, but I think the biggest shift is actually moving to tech as a tool, as a teammate. And like my hot take on this is people start trusting AI more than Google. We're already seeing it. Gen Z has been using TikTok as a search engine for quite a while now. So I think AI tools are becoming the go-to answers for recommendation, advice. And it's not about convenience anymore. It's more about like contextual understanding. And from like a marketing lens, it has like major implications for like your Google ads or your programmatic advertising. So as users learn more on AI to filter and like interpret the content, we're going to be thinking more on relying on like not keyword-based targeting and more emphasis on contextual targeting, behavioral intent-driven advertising. And I think that goes to show that we're using that data based on behavioral signals to be like using that as the next competitive edge, being more proactive of what they're going to do as opposed to what they did do.
I think I'll pick it up and run from there, because I think we talk about like the upcoming innovations, the excitement things that are happening in the space. I think you just nailed it. And I think it's the silver bullet that every seller, marketer, business owner is looking for. And that's really to understand intent, right? So a thing at Opus Match, when we first came into the space, not fully understanding staffing, was we really knew data really well. We could tell if behavior looked the way it was supposed to do or the way it was not supposed to look and be able to trigger on sort of those sort of things. And I think that's the new modern full stack marketer. They're no longer going in and trying to spray and pray and throw out the biggest lead funnel they can. We want to do that, don't get me wrong. But we now know with all the noise that's out there, with all the AI that's out there, you've got to be able to look at your leads. You've got to be able to look at your activity. You've got to be able to rank it. You've got to be able to stack against it. And you've got to be able to dial in on what's real and what's fake out there. There's a lot of noise, a lot of vaporware out there. And I think that the next, let's call it frontier in AI and technology is really starting to understand why people work, when do they want to work, and is this the right time to work? So yep. It's definitely a candidate first market. So if you can understand the candidate's intent, almost like an old school e-commerce marketer, I think that's the way that we're all going to be doing it moving forward, right? So,
and I love that point, Corey. It's almost like predictive insights, right? Being able to say, hey, I know based off people we've placed before, this candidate's going to be a good fit. Because right now it's hard for teams to understand that. You have different interview processes across all different recruiters. And once you place them, you don't have that data. But once you're able to source all this data into one spot, I know based off, you know, this interview that I've had with this candidate, they have the attributes that this client's looking for. They're going to show up on time. They're going to be there. And if you have the ability to do that, your speed to hire, your quality of hire is just going to be that much better.
Oh, yeah. And the downstream to that, when it comes to a more cost-effective lead, getting more lifetime value out of the lead, not having to source as much because you focused on the right candidates first before going out and buying more leads, you see agencies become a lot more effective when they can leverage this data, automate it, actionize on it, and then make Sarah's life a lot easier. So
yeah, you don't want your recruiters to be resume pushers, right? Like, hey, here's
exactly
this I just found, but that you want them to be almost like partners with your clients. So it's like, hey, I know that the four candidates that CrossMed sent to me every time, they're going to be the top ones out there because they have the right data. They send the right candidates. So instead of those resume pushers, they're actual, you know, strategic partners with your client, which is really important. You can use that data to figure that out.
On the intent front, I always think about it like fishing, like with a bobber. It's just like, it's like the most basic, but it's like the dumbed down version. I'm always like, we're all sitting there pulling the line up constantly. And it's like, well, there's no fish. And it's like, well, the bobber wasn't moving. It's like, you need to make sure you have a bobber to identify when somebody actually is interested and likelihood of having a fish much higher. So
that's great.
14 years living in the US and I'd never heard the term bobber. New stuff comes up all the time. So we call it float, which I guess makes just as much sense. But I'll chime in here as well. I got a couple of bold predictions, right, for the future. So in the 22 years I've been in the industry, people have been saying it's the death of the job board. It's the death of the job board. It's the death of the job board. And it never quite happens. But I do believe that AI at some level is the death of the resume, right? Because most people are using AI to write resumes. Then most people are using AI to read resumes. So you just start to pare it down into the kind of core data that sits within that. And so if you then start to look at job boards, their primary source is resumes, right? They've got clicks and eyeballs, but so does Instagram, so does Facebook, so does Google Ads. The one thing that they've got is to give you a resume of a candidate. And so I think what we're going to see in the next few years is some impact on the job boards as people diversify around more and more programmatic, more direct advertising, more other sources. Those job boards naturally are going to pivot up the funnel and start doing more for their direct employers and competing with staffing companies. So I think, you know, the LinkedIns, the Indeeds of the world, the way that they're going to handle that is by leveraging their tech to start sort of, you know, hoovering up some of that business. And so the people that are going to survive and the people that are going to thrive are going to be people that embrace tech themselves in like an innovative way. And that intellectual property becomes their tech stack that they've built, right? So the CrossMeds of the world really thinking through the experience that's relevant to them and their customers. How do I put it together? How do I add the content and the service layer around it so that I can add a tremendous amount of value to my customers as opposed to, you know, whatever Indeed or ZipRecruiter roll out as some affordable, or Vivian or whatever, some affordable immediate to sort of source recruiting model. That's where actually a lot of what's going on in our world becomes incredibly important, because you can try and just buy an off-the-shelf solution, right, for a software that does absolutely everything like we're talking about before, but that's not going to make sense for your audience, right? It might create sense, but it's not going to make sense. So it kind of puts you in a position where you really need to start thinking about your tech stack as being innovative, and you need to start paring off the threat from some of these really, really large billion-dollar tech companies that at the moment you're signing massive checks to. So that's my bold prediction for the future, and we'll check in 3 years and you can tell me how wrong I got it.
Any other exciting moments? Matt, you got anything?
Yeah, I'll throw one out there. I think us tech boys and girls get a little spoiled in sales because a lot of the really cutting edge tech out there is geared more towards tech sales, staffing and recruiting sales, and recruiting typically get that a couple of years down the line. One of the things that we've experimented with a couple of vendors, I think is the future, the direction that AI is going is voice. And right now in the staffing and recruiting industry, I think you're seeing a lot of voice AI for the candidate experience, like left and right. There's a new one every week. It's pretty wild. But as an internal sales rep, think about how much value voice can bring with, rather than having to type in a lot of administrative stuff into your system. If you could just say it out loud, and I could say, hey, I'm reaching out to Sarah Orr. She's the CMO at CrossMed. Write me a short, concise email with a low friction call to action, seeing if she wants to see, learn more about our solutions. And then it just sends it. I don't have to type anything out. That's where I see it going. And a little bit of a spoiler alert, but I think Staffing Engine wants to be on the cutting edge there. We have some pretty exciting announcements around that coming soon. But I think that voice is going to play a big role, not only in the candidate client experience, but also allowing end users to work way faster than they could before.
Whose voice are you going to use, Matt?
I love that.
Hopefully not mine. I mean, maybe we'll dub over Sarah's or something. She's got
you know what a nice gentrified British badger?
The gentrified badger I'll go back to. I got to chat with you about that offline.
I love that. Pro tip, if you're using AI to send me a specific email, make sure you add some humor in there. Otherwise, I'm gonna drown that out.
Pete, anything on your end?
I mean, I think Corey talked about it. I think the biggest thing is the data piece. I don't think people are using it enough because there's not enough data to understand why that person's been a good fit or where they're at. I think the predictive insights, like we were talking about earlier, at the end of the day, is going to help your company move those candidates through the process a little bit faster. Like you said, it's tough to figure out why that person's going to be a good fit, or maybe in some IT positions right now, as you know, there's too many people out there. So how do you differentiate those talents to make sure they're a good fit? Using the predictive insights from running references, doing post-hire information, at the end of the day, is going to be the most important thing for your company.
Yeah, I think what I've kind of heard from all of you guys, and just second and double down on, is like, candidate experience matters, quality matters. There's going to be a shift towards figuring out how do you drive insights and be a solution for your partners. Like, how are you actually driving value, making sure that you're putting the right people on contract, getting higher quality candidates, and how are you keeping up from a candidate experience perspective? We have two last questions. So one to open up to the floor just on if there's any closing comments or actionable tips to share. And then we have one kind of fun question to round it out, and then we'll call it a day.
I have like an actionable tip for anyone out there that's kind of looking at what, like you kind of mentioned before, like there's so many tech partners out there, and like, how do you identify who to go with first, especially if you have a restricted budget? I would just start asking yourself, how does this tool help me be proactive and not just reactive, and think about how it's more scalable for your company, and just look for features that like solve real challenges in that scalable way and be strategic that aligns with like your long-term goals. I think that's where the true ROI lives.
I've got something on top of that. Even before you go look at vendors and start doing demos, understand where the pain points are in your business and what you're trying to solve for. We get so many folks who raise their hand for a demo, and we're not going to demo just to demo. Like, what is the pain point that we're trying to solve for? Because people that are going out to market and evaluating 12 different AI solutions and just taking demo after demo without really understanding what their challenges are, never going to buy, and they're going to get stuck in this indecision mode. Like, you have to, you know, have conversations with your team internally, figure out what you're going to solve for, how you think you should solve for it, and then go evaluate solutions that match up with those pain points. I get hit up so much by like all these AI sales tools, and I won't take a meeting unless it's something that I know that we're struggling with. Otherwise, I'm going to spend half my day taking demos of products that I'm never going to buy, and it's not worth it.
On the flip side of that, Matt, I would say if you're thinking about it in terms of understanding your pain points, I think if you're trying to work on the candidate experience, you want to understand your candidate's pain points, not all candidates' pain points, right? And so we see that a lot in our world. It's like, think about your target demographic of who you're trying to go after, right? The generational, the location, what they're into, and then go and ask them the questions, right? Don't make assumptions about something that's going to be too automated or not automated enough. You know, you want to go out and maybe actually form like a candidate feedback committee around your technology, right? You don't want to go out and build technology, but you want to think like a technologist. And that user acceptance testing is what every tech company on the planet does, right? And so within your tech ecosystem, you need to be talking to your candidates about what they want to see, getting them testing out that experience and enhancing it and improving it over time if you want to build that engagement and that efficiency in a really tough market.
Absolutely.
I think one thing people need to not forget about, though, this is a relationship business, right? So don't forget about those relationships that you've created. Once you've placed that candidate, make sure you're checking in to see how things are going, when their contract's up, right? Like Sarah, you were talking about, hey, it's hard to find talent right now. Well, there's talent that you have right in front of you that you have placed and their contract's coming up in 4 or 5 weeks. What are you doing to make sure you're having those conversations to make sure that those relationships stay strong so they come back to you and they're not going to other agencies? So don't forget the relationship side of the business. That's probably going to be the biggest differentiator that you do have.
Absolutely.
All right. I think we're going to close it out. I'm just curious about this one from all of you. What is your most unique or impactful use of AI that you have on a regular basis or something just for fun? This has been a good hot topic at all the conferences. So I'm curious to know, how are you guys using it in a way that's especially unique or fun?
Okay, so I've been using it. This is non-business related. So this will be a fun way that I've been using it. Did you know that you can roast your photos? And that has been a very popular thing that I've been doing with my family, my friends, and some of my coworkers here. And so it's really fun to humble yourself, humble your friends. And that has been a lot of fun for us.
Yeah. Pro tip on that. You can tell it to light roast them, or you can tell it to roast them so hard that they question their own existence.
Yes. So I think that has been a lot of fun.
Chris Howden from Newberry recently told me that you can have it roast you in the voice of Nikki Glaser. and I did that, and it's amazing.
That's awesome.
I've started negotiating with AI. So I think people use AI for therapy. I try and get it to prove a premise and then see if I can change its mind just to play around with it and just see if I can get it to go full circle in its own talking points. So you can play games with it too.
One.
That's awesome. I've got close. I've definitely managed to persuade it that my ideas are better than its ideas, but then I guess it largely is there to please me. But it's also a bit of a proof case that, you know, it's working off the data in the industry, including the data that you give it. So
anyone else? All right. I'll close it out with that. I thought there'd be some unique ones with the tech group.
I don't do anything good. I just look in my fridge. I'm like, hey, this is what's in my fridge right now. What can I make out of this that's edible? So I think that's one of the best things for me right now.
Peter's about to tell you more about his upcoming AI food app. Is it hot dog or is it hot dog?
It's getting some good results right now.
Yeah. Hot dog all just only works with foods that are the same shape.
All right. Well, I really appreciate all of you guys being on today. This was a great conversation. Sarah, thank you so much for going deep into your tech stack and helping to explain how to approach this and giving some insights to the listeners on what they should be thinking about moving forward. So thank you guys all for being here today.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, y'all.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Staffing Show. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at staffinghub.com to never miss an episode. Until next time.